Hello, and welcome to At Your End Step. My name is Morgan. I'm here with Mike.
Hello.
We have another fun-filled episode for you folks this week. Hope you guys were staying cool during this summer heat wave that was rolling through the Midwest. And I know other parts of the U.S. were affected by it.
But I think it was like all parts. I saw the little map on the news.
It was just the angry sun from Mario that was just swinging over like our country. Yeah. Over North America entirely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, rough. It's like, where are the blue parts of the map for the cool people? Nope.
No.
All gone.
None here. No cool people here.
Dumped and cooked.
But we're obviously in the middle of summer. So what are you going to expect? Come on. It's Bernie outside.
That's primary season. Then it's Bernie outside.
I see. I see what we did there. So before we jump into the show, definitely want to give out a shout out to all of our patrons.
Give out shouts to.
I'm a little sleepy today.
Hey,
so.
Is a shout for you. Giving them out. You want one of these shouts? Come get them.
Shouts got your name on it.
Shout.
a shout out to all of our patrons over on our Patreon. If you are interested in becoming a patron, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/@yourendstep. We appreciate our patrons and everything they do for us to help produce the show week in and week out, and we really could do it without them, so thanks. So, we obviously had San Diego Comic-Con. We talked about it on the past week's show, and yeah, we got a lot of new information from it, and really the biggest thing that we got, I would have to say, is we know what the fall set's going to be, and we were wrong. I was wrong.
I don't think I made a strong prediction as to what it was, beyond the Koth Garrick Mountain.
Yeah, which also didn't happen.
Yeah.
Won't happen. No, confirmed, no Koth in Throne of Eldraine.
I don't think he fits the aesthetic, unfortunately.
Definitely not. We do have at least two confirmed planeswalkers that will be in some way on this plane, which are the Kenrith twins, which are Rowan and Will Kenrith.
Oh, did we see Will?
We haven't seen Will. He has been confirmed that he is still a planeswalker, and he will be in this set. I don't know to what capacity. I don't know if he's going to get a planeswalker card, or if he's going to be on art. I think Morrow clarified that there's going to be three planeswalkers. One of them is a new walker. And then the twins. So I think that confirms that Will be getting a card.
Gotcha.
We're
interested to see why they didn't make it to Ravnica.
Maybe they just don't care. They're like, whatever. Weird lights happen all the time on my plane. Who cares? I'm just going to ignore this like call that I feel within my entire body.
My entire being, yes.
They're like, whatever. Who cares? Probably just some fairies. I don't know. Which is another thing that, so we actually got the name of the set the Friday before the actual panel, and the invitation was handed out, and it had a bunch of fairies on it, and people are like, oh gosh, fairies, and it just shows you how rampant, like, the financial speculators are within this, like, community, because they're just like, oh, buy up all the fairy cards, make everything, like, secluded Glen, like, $1 billion, just because, like, there are fairies on some invitations.
Carrie from the Vorthos cast had a very good fake blog a tog, just kind of like dumping on people for going on Secluded
Glen.
Yeah. I enjoyed
it. It is very good. Very, very good. and so the idea of the set of Throne of Eldraine is it's Grimm's Fairy Tales meets Camelot. So we had a lot of like traditional like fairy tale imagery. We had some notable characters like, you know, we have Goldilocks. A Goldilocks stand-in, which is very, very funny, because the art depicts, like, this child warrior who has slain bears.
Three bear heads, like, hung up on the wall
behind
her.
Just, like, the most metal child that you have ever seen. we also had, Rapunzel.
We had Rapunzel. We have the Little Mermaid in some capacity.
Yes,
the Frog Prince looks like. The Gingerbread Man.
The Gingerbread Man.
Is just wild.
I'm in for that. I'm gingerbread man tribal. Like, I don't know what it is. Hopefully there's enough to support it, but yeah.
We got, and again, the Camelot part, we definitely got like a picture of like a some sort of water creature, maybe a mermaid passing out a sword.
I understand that's a great way to run your
scimitars.
Lofting scimitars. You gotta watch.
Tarts.
Gotta watch out. King might come by and oppress you.
King of the Eldraines. Who are the Eldraines? We all are. We're all the Eldraines. I am your king.
He also had like some like knightly round imagery.
Yeah.
No table there necessarily, but they were in a circle. So
like a summoning circle.
Yeah, it still counts.
Summoning the table.
But a lot of the art's very, very good. The key art especially has been getting a lot of praise. Hats off to Seb McKinnon who should make apparently all the art in Magic, because everything he releases is like amazing.
I've been working on that house that my wife and I have been working with in my office area, and I was like, well, I'm buying this print. I'm just flat out buying it, and I'm slapping it right on the wall, and that's and I am. It's great. It's, oh man. It's... He's just next level. I don't know. He's just, compared to everyone else working in the game right now, Seb McKinnon is just...
I mean, I literally can't disagree with you. It would be going against, like, entire public opinion. I love a lot of his stuff as well. So, with, like, what do you think about the sort of the setting and the aesthetic?
So I want to wait and see a little bit. Like, again, I said it needed to wow me. Consider myself whelmed.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, I'm intrigued by it, but we didn't get any cards.
Yeah.
And we got a really, really funky card design, which we can talk about.
Yes.
With the aforementioned Goldilocks card. But I do like the aesthetic. You know, specifically mentioning that it's going to be a Grimm's Fairy Tales sort of lens into what Magic is trying to do. It definitely feels very Innistrad-ish, if that makes sense. Like, most of the art, especially the art associated with, like, the woods and the actual fairy tales, darker. You know, we've got some Snow White imagery. We've got some, like, Sleeping Beauty imagery.
True.
And like, if you are unfamiliar, the Grimm's Fairy Tale versions of those are pretty dark.
They are dark. They're not Disney-fied,
No, there's a lot of death.
Yep.
A lot of random dismemberment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming they're not going that far into it. You know what I mean? I don't think, like, we're getting a card where, like, you cut off Cinderella's stepsister's heel or some stuff.
Right.
But I like that. You know, I think, like, at least the art I've seen so far has done a good job drawing the line between, like a Magic set and, like, kitsch. Is that what I want to say?
Sure.
There's a game I played at Gen Con a couple years ago, and it's like, it's some sort of, like, parody Candyland variant of the same vein of, like the Real Story, the Three Little Pigs, those kind of things. And when I saw the Gingerbread Man art, I was like, I've seen this before because of that, which, like, does sort of start meandering into parody. So I don't know. I'm tentatively excited for it. The art we've seen is pretty great, but I do want to see how they do things mechanically here. You know what I mean? Because I mentioned before that, like, their top-down sets, like, it really depends. And Innistrad is the high bar, and Theros is kind of the low, in my opinion. So
yeah.
We'll see how they thread the needle on cards, since we have no cards. Right. Aesthetically, I'm for it with some apprehension.
Yeah. I will definitely be more into the Camelot stuff than the Grimm's Fairy Tale stuff, because that's more of, like, my background. When I was growing up, my dad was basically in something called the SCA, which
was in the round table.
I mean, like, at least with a bunch of people that definitely wanted to, you know, obviously received a lot of influence from actual time period of, you know, medieval times, not the themed restaurant, but also, you know, Arthurian legends and stuff like that. I've been around, like, knights and swords and dragons and all these very common fantasy tropes for literally the entirety of my life, and that's kind of my jam, and I'm interested to see when what they do with that, I think, like, it's an interesting mishmash, I think, because I don't think those things always naturally, like, go together, especially, like, when you've taken things that have, you know, become popular, that have taken from, like, the Grimm's fairy tales and stuff like that, and they've gotten so far away from the source material that they're only, you know, light references or, you know, completely divergent things happening in the two stories, mainly looking at Disney.
Taking that a step further, I'll take a second here and put my college degree glasses on. But obviously, like, what you're talking about is pretty common with, like, Middle Ages, like, both Grimm's Fairy Tale, but specifically Arthurian legend and, like, knights, the concept of knights, is the most heavily romanticized.
Yes.
And if you don't remember, like, when you were in high school and in English, and, like, people said, like, oh, like, the Romantic period, and you're like, yeah, because they love each other. So no. Mm. Like, romanticism is, like, the idealization of something.
Yes.
So it's why, like, when you watch a movie about knights, the good knight is in, like, shiny chrome armor. then they had no metal that looked like that. And the bad knight is always in some sort of dark or dull iron or ferrous metal, so it looks bad.
So, like, you know, we remember the movie, like, A Knight's Tale?
Hey, that movie's great. That, I love that movie.
Don't get me wrong. I love A Knight's Tale.
But, yeah, that's – yeah, it's all romanticized.
Yeah.
When you start really digging into, like – so, like, you could take the very, very light touch of Arthurian legend, which is just like King Arthur and his knights were the best of knights and they were moral and good and they did these things. But it's again, this is where WotC doesn't always thread this needle really well. You cannot avoid that the basis of specifically Arthurian legend is it's all heavily tied to Catholicism, and it's all theologically based. And more than that, it is not about the success of the knights. It's just as much about the failures of the knights as well. You know, if you follow into La Morte Arthur, which is the death of Arthur, and it tells it the legend, I mean, you get into the whole point that, like, Arthur's sister Morgana, like, tricks him into having a child, and he has a falling out with Guinevere, and Lancelot, like, cheats on with his wife, and, like, it's real messed up, right? Like, and, like, the biggest MacGuffin for Arthurian legend outside of, like, Excalibur is the Holy Grail. Here's the thing. Do you make a card that is like Holy Grail-esque? I don't think it can. That's some weird appropriation. You know what I mean? We've talked about how like it's weird to do some top-down stuff like Theros and even Amon Kett where you are appropriating an ancient culture. Appropriating a very modern religion is tough as well. You know what I mean? Like you can't just be like, ha, this is the Holy Grail card. And you're like, so you made a magic card out of like the cup that caught the blood of Christ? Now, that in and of itself is not a real object. I hope you all know that as well. Like, that's not a real thing. Like, that was made up in the Middle Ages as a MacGuffin for the knights to go on a quest for. But even, like, Grimm's Fairy Tales are the same way. They're all just morality tales. They're all just ways to teach children and humans to not do the bad thing because you will get punished. So we tend to associate it with, again, the romantic vision of, like, magic and knights and this and this. But I think, again, they've got a tough needle to thread here. That's where my apprehension comes from. So I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, I think, like, people look at things like a Ren fair and stuff, you know, which I'm sure you've gone to your fair share of Renaissance fairs. And they're a good, fun time.
I've definitely been to, like, things that are like Renaissance fairs. But it's, like, a little bit
adjacent.
It's a little bit more serious, if I can say that without getting ridiculed.
No, here's the thing. This is not a judgment zone. Okay, I will give that full to you. If you want to subscribe to my e-course about the romanticization of like Middle Ages knights, like absolutely, and even like we talk about medieval, but even the time period like is a wild variation,
right?
And like Arthur himself is like at various points in English history not a legend, but very much a real person who you can trace lineage to. Like, oh no, this was King Arthur, and he's descended this way. It's like, it's a mishmash of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think like when you look at this, like they can't get too serious or else they're going to appropriate actual religious ideology.
Right.
But at the same time, you don't want it to be like, what's the, medieval times theater. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want it to be like, and now you get your cardboard crown and go take a picture with the king. That's just a fat guy. I checked.
you don't want to, so we want to thread the needle between like, a Game of Thrones-esque thing, and then the parody Game of Thrones trailer that they made where it was like...
The Medieval Fun Times Village?
Yes, correct. Is that what we're...
That's the best bad lip reading, by the way. It's very good. If you've never seen it...
It's very impressive.
And like, you could easily sit here and listen to what I'm saying right now and be like, okay, come on, like, appropriation of Christianity. It's like, well, yeah, that's a legitimate thing to be afraid of. And when you say, like, it's going to be Arthur, you've got to be careful. You just do. Now, granted, I think they actually said... It's a, yeah, you put it in here. It's a Camelot. So, like, they want castles, maybe less and, of, like, than Arthur.
And I assume ham and Spamalot.
Right. but I think, I mean, you can't think of even, like, iconic images from that time period, historically and both, like, in our filmed imagery, that isn't associated with the cross. You know what it's I mean? True. Like that is the basis of kind of all of this imagery. So I think they have to be careful. I think it's going to be cool. And they've already, it's not like they haven't done knights for forever.
Yeah, 100%.
But when you specifically say Camelot, we're taking British Arthurian legend, you've got to be careful.
Yeah. And you could even like, you could probably even make comparisons to like Benalia in Dominaria.
100%.
Yeah, and be like, but okay.
They never just said it was this. Right. You know what I mean? And maybe that's just semantics.
Sure, exactly. They could just, you know, that is the easiest thing to like connotate in real life.
Right.
You know, when you say, you know, we already have Grimm's Fairy Tales as a good like connotation, right. Then it's just like, well, what's the biggest thing that has like knights and like sort of the knightly themes, which I imagine
right.
will
yeah, like Camelot. Honor, valor, those
right,
sorts
exactly.
Of things. That is not, and it doesn't say like you shouldn't be excited about that. Like I'm not trying to put a damper on any of you. I think it's interesting that mm-hmm. you know, that to go with this. I do think the art looks good, and I wait to see what cards look like. It does seem like they are, especially with the, and I guess I can segue into looking at some of this other stuff.
Yeah,
we look at the if you've not seen it yet, you should definitely take a look. The box for the card of the Goldilocks that they gave us, and there's also an alternative like promo form we're looking at as well, where it looks like a book.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So like they're at least from the Grimm's fairy tale part of it, it looks like they are leaning into like storybook imagery.
Right. So yeah, we have this card that has this new interesting frame. Now the frame that we have on the website is a little bit different than what was actually shown. We had like power toughness, we had so a mana cost of like one green, and then we had an activated ability, which was like green greens. Well, we had a second mana cost on there, I should say, that was seven, so five generic green greens. So we don't know what this is for. It is for a new mechanic for the set, obviously, but they kind of just wanted to give us an idea of what this base frame looks like to kind of compare it to what they're calling a showcase frame. And the showcase frame has different art, and it's very... you probably know what the sort of imagery and stuff like the like at the beginning of books of that time period, they have like the very fancy sort of like calligraphy and things like that.
It definitely has that like
that sort of feel
of vines and things
yes.
as well.
Yeah,
much so. And like even the art style is like it feels more like a painting.
Yeah, it's very again storybookish.
Yeah,
and they're really kind of hammering this home. And these you know, special showcase frames are going to be something that are going to be unique to this set, obviously. But we're also getting a new booster product, which is going to be tied into basically, you know, kind of leaning into this idea of specialty frames and specialty looking cards for Eldraine. And kind of the idea of it is it's going to be a booster pack at a higher price point that's going to have things like, you know, one rare or mythic rare within it that's an extended art. So when they say extended art, think the box toppers from
right.
Ultimate Masters. A, you know, foil rare, mythic rare in this as well. 9 foil commons and uncommons. So 3 special frame cards. So that's either going to be, you know, your showcase cards, these very storybook looking cards. Or I assume not necessarily... every showcase card is going to be a story, like the new mechanic story
right.
card. I assume that there will be some that are just look like souped up regular frames. And then we have an option to get a borderless planeswalker card. 1 ancillary card, and then...
Ancillary
card, excuse me. And then a foil token as well. So the ancillary card, they have it as sort of...
it could be
spelled out down here at the bottom.
It could be a bio box card for like from the set.
Yep.
It could be the planeswalker stuff from the planeswalker decks. It could be stuff from the brawl decks, which we'll talk about in a second.
Yeah.
So it says it's going to be the catch all for mechanically unique cards associated with the set.
Correct, and it will be non foil. So obviously they are going to be continuing with the foil bio box promo, and this is a way to basically create a non foil version to avoid the Nexus of Fate issue. That we currently have in Standard. An alternative to that is to stop doing that, but they're going to go and create a... Now, keep in mind, this collector's booster pack is targeted to be somewhere between $20 to $25. Obviously, there's no MSRP, but that is kind of the price point they were trying to hit on. And from what I'm seeing, these are limited products. They are not print at demand, which is kind of an interesting way to take this product. And it's apparently 8 to a box, I think, something like that. From what I saw on people saying that they could pre-order some of them. And the pre-order prices of these are bananas. They are probably I saw the thing I saw today was someone was offering a pre-order for them at $225 a box, and that's like $28 a booster. So I don't know the exact breakdown of how many are in a box, though, because they're different than your traditional booster box. Obviously, your actual booster, your draft booster, is not changing. It's still going to be available.
So you're using these terms. Let's talk about that a little bit if you didn't read the article. So Rosewater talked about this. He talked about some more restructuring behind the scenes, which is a conversation for another day because whatever. But essentially, they had a group that was on, you know, the idea of like, how can you make opening a pack better? Because there's a lot of complaints about how the best cards recently have not been available in packs. And when you think about the things that, you know, they've done with, you know, the Mythic Editions, you think they did with the box toppers for Ultimate Masters, like even Flusterstorm in Modern Horizons, like, is just like a card, you know, just cards where it's like, okay, why can't I open these in packs? Like, why can't I do these things? And I assume this is also some feedback after like the shift away from, you know, inventions and masterpieces. So they came up, that's where this sort of restructuring came from. And there's three different types of packs. So Morgan just described the collector booster. And then we have the draft booster, which is the same pack you normally would open, but there's calling it a draft booster, you know, because like it's for drafting. But if you buy a box, this is what you'll get. And then they're going to have something called a theme booster, which I guess already exists.
Correct. Yeah, they have.
I didn't know that.
They have guild theme boosters right now.
That makes sense, yeah.
And then when a non-guild themed set comes out, then we have these color ones, which are going to be 35 different cards, which will...
It's 1.1. So okay. Like, you're supposed to get one rare, but 1 in 10, you'll get 2.
Oh, okay, okay.
So 1.1 rares.
And then 33 to 34 commons, and a commons and a reference card. So this will be basically it's a big booster.
It's a big booster for a specific color.
Correct. Then you'll have that'll be a sort of a middle price point, and then you have the collector's booster. I don't know what you could find the sort of theme boosters now out. I don't know what price point they are right now, but. So these will be your three booster products, and I think the collector's booster is just about the stupidest thing that I have ever heard of.
So reading his like description of like the Project Booster Fun, and then their answer was to create a limited run product that's very expensive, that has all the stuff that people like. Now, granted, some of these things can show up in regular boosters.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, so some of the alternate frames and some of the extended border stuff. There's a couple like spreadsheets around of like how this all works, because like this article is not exactly the most clear thing you'll ever see.
Yeah.
But of course, the rates are a lot lower. But I don't know how you go, man, people really want to open these things in booster packs. What do we do? And then they look at Modern Horizons 1 and they go, I know what we do. We just make a stupid booster pack and jack it up. We'll put like some silly string and like, I don't know, some like balloons in there and stuff.
So the thing that blows my mind about this product and what it's targeting and what it's doing and all the quote unquote cool things it's adding. So you're getting these full art frames, these what will likely look like very beautiful cards, and probably trying to capture the same audience that masterpieces, you know, and booster packs would capture, right? The only issue is these are all standard cards. So they only have so high of a ceiling because they only have longevity and playability, right? Like, even if they are Planeswalkers, like, I understand that Planeswalkers is a big, like, ticket item, but the reason why masterpieces are so exciting is because you have legacy playable cards, you have modern playable cards that are able to be open, and not to say that these new standard cards won't, you know, break through. They very well could, and then they just become the chase ones of the set, and then congratulations, Wizards, I guess you did it. You found another way to take advantage of your player base, because...
That's the name of the game, bro.
Yeah, I understand, and I'm the biggest probably advocate of, like, don't trust WotC, because, like, they're probably just trying to take advantage of you, but this is just, like, one of the most, I don't know, craven things to see from them in a while. And it's just like, so like, let's say none of the cards break through in the modern. All of these specialty cards that you can open, all they are is just standard playable cards. So like, what? Who? I just don't understand who this is for then. Like, who's chasing this? And now that you've created this super expensive product that only will probably, you know, encourage people who are trying to make a buck off of their fellow players to buy these up and sell them at double the price.
Yeah.
Until the bottom falls out of them.
Yeah,
and
then, if there's anything worthwhile in it, that's immediately what happens, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Look at the masterpiece. You know,
I don't know how you look at the three now. Well, I guess only two of them were super bad. But you look at the two Mythic Editions and you go, what's the lesson here?
Do this more.
This every set.
This more.
All of it.
Every time.
Do it to each one of our stores.
Also, only have it be standard cards. Because even if you look at like other masterpieces and the Mythic sets and stuff like that, all the standard only playable ones in those sets are always the lowest.
Of course, yeah.
They're always the lowest priced ones because they have nowhere to go. Once they're out of standard, they're just going to drop like a rock because people can't do anything with them unless you're a huge fan of a particular Planeswalker or a particular pet card in your EDH deck. Like, you know, maybe it has a minimum price point, but again, that's only driven because of like rarity, and I just don't understand. Like, I just don't see the point of this. Like, it's great. I can't even say that. I don't. There's no theory that this is great in. I guess it's great if it only goes to the people that ever want this. It's a very specific product for a very specific set of players, and those I feel bad for those specific set of players that want these because they're going to pay through the nose for them if they want them, if they demand them, I should say.
You know, we talked about this recently, but I'm going to go back to even, like, I don't even know what they're trying to do with it, because, like, we go back to Alara, and I talked about the foil Alara packs.
Yeah, that's what this 100% reminds me of.
It's so weird.
And you could still find those for the longest time after, like, Alara was well cycled out of standard, and it's just like, okay, the cool, I guess. I just feel bad for the people that genuinely want these and are going to not resist, not be able to say no, and are going to unfortunately pay way too much for them.
Yeah, and I think like taking that even further, like I also feel bad just for collectors in general, and friends who are collectors.
Yeah,
and they just keep finding new ways to make 50 versions of something.
Yeah,
and like WotC's not going to make money off the collector here because the collector's going to buy individually, right? So like it just punishes those people. I don't know. I don't know how you look at something called Project Booster Fun, and then you the thing they come back with and run with is, here's a $30 booster pack for a very select group of players.
Well, if you are a subsidiary of Hasbro, that's probably how. I mean, like, there are times when WotC definitely feels like WotC, and then there are times where it just feels like we are a subsidiary of a toy company.
The Scooby-Doo thing? Like, it was Hasbro the whole time.
It was Hasbro the whole time, and this just feels like Hasbro the whole time. I don't know. I encourage our listeners who are listening to this and have a different opinion about these collector boosters to feel free to contact us and try to explain why these are desirable. Not why they're desirable, but how this is a good thing for the player.
I think that's key. Because I think I would understand why you want them. I'm not going to lie and say some of these cards are probably going to look amazing and gorgeous, but I'm going to want them. Don't get me wrong.
Probably.
There's a lot of cards that look amazing and gorgeous that I want, I don't have.
Yeah.
Right? But I agree that I want someone to convince me why who's not associated with WotC. I want someone to convince me why this is. I agree, a good idea.
Yeah,
because
and the answer can't be because I can buy them all and make profits.
Right. Yeah. If the if the response is yes, I can make money off of this, then there's still a problem here.
Yes. I just it's just disappointing, and I think like them trying to like make this a big deal is unsatisfactory. Just completely. I guess there are other things that are there's going to be like other promo packs that are going to be released with starting with Throne of Eldraine as well, which are like the sort of the
FNM / like standard showdown, like all those things.
And they have a similar breakdown, but they are going to be including a MTG Arena promo card, which will net them grant you a booster pack when you redeem it, which is cool, I guess, but it's like not enough, if that makes any sense, because it's not a full booster pack, right? It's an arena booster pack, which is only, you know, eight cards
is eight or nine. That was nine.
I think it's two uncommons, one rare, and then five commons, so I think it's eight.
Okay, fair enough.
If it was like a whole draft booster pack, then yeah, sure, that'd be that'd be cool, but it's definitely just an arena one. So, okay. Not really pushing it for me, to be perfectly honest. Yeah.
Let's talk about one cool thing.
Okay. This is a cool thing. So the next thing on their list is the player spotlight card. So this is kind of like a pseudo invitational card. The player that's chosen for the player spotlight card will not design the card. They will assist with the R&D with the selection of the card, and their image will appear on it. And the first person to have a crack at it is world champion of 2018, Javier Dominguez. Now, they didn't say that the world champion will always be the player spotlight card. It seems like
they
can sort of
just pick who they want.
Correct. And obviously, that wouldn't make any sense because these are going to be showing up, presumably, in every set. Right. So you would need to cycle through your players unless you just want four Javier Dominguez-based Magic cards in your in your trade binder. I think like this is a cool idea. This is something that a lot of people have been asking for, which is for WotC to highlight the player. And this is a way to do it. People will like be able to see this and be excited about that and ask who that is. And they'll be like, oh, that's the 2018 world champion. And they'll be like, well, how do you become the world champion of Magic? And then like,
and it will say, we actually have no idea. That's a good question. I think you just declare yourself that. I declare myself world champion.
I take all challengers at this point in time going forward.
Who's ever beat me? Javier Dominguez, just saying, never beaten me.
I mean, he also never beaten him.
But yeah, what I'm saying is neither one of us can really claim to be the world champion until we decide this.
No, fair. Okay.
So
sure. Javier Dominguez, I guess Mike just called you out. Anyway, I am, this is the opposite of how I feel about the Collector's Booster. I'm pretty excited about this. I think this
Cool.
It's a cool thing. And it feels like it is something that is going to be a lot easier to pull off, if that makes any sense. You know, you have to work with a player to design a card. You just,
It sounds more like one of these cards is available for you to be art on, which fits your style more.
Yeah.
So, and it probably won't even be mechanics. It'll be like, here's a green druid, or here's a black skeleton. That would be a weird one, but like,
why is the skeleton got a weird face on it?
Hey,
why is the skeleton wearing a Javier Dominguez mask?
It's just trick or treating. It's Javier Dominguez. It's actually really good.
But yeah, I think that's a cool thing that they did announce. So, yeah. I did want to circle back to Eldrain, and we were talking about like some of the themes that might be present due to like the source material. Do you think there's like a good like mechanic that you could like think about that could make a comeback in the set?
I mean, the generic one that pops right into my head is Exalted, because that's the one that's been associated with Knights. Yeah. Exalted is always like, going back to Bant, that Bant Knights had Exalted.
That's cool. I like that.
So I could see that for sure.
And this could even be, like, not necessarily mechanics, but, like, other, like, tropes that they've had in other sets.
Yeah.
The thing that came to me, because we were talking about, like, so quests, obviously, were a thing for Zendikar.
That's a thing.
Or ordeals.
Ooh, ordeals are interesting.
Yeah.
That is true. But again, like, so again, are you going to have the ordeal of the Grail, or ordeal of the cup? Like,
yeah.
I don't like that. I don't like, well, 'cause, like, I'm not exactly a religious person, but I still don't like that.
So there was like, what was the quest for the, there was already a quest for the, yeah, there's already been a quest for the Holy Relic.
I guess that's fair.
So a lot of people based on the art have been thinking like, well, this could also be maybe an equipment leaning set as well.
Yeah.
You know, this could be where maybe we see another sword. You know, Y.
Oh my God! And standard,
Yeah.
Potentially. I mean, they brought protection back, so yeah. They've opened the door.
They certainly have. They certainly have.
And don't call me Shirley.
But like, I mean, they already have quests for the Holy Relic as like a possible.
Yeah, but I never once associated that with the Holy Grail. Maybe that's just me being ignorant.
Overlooking it.
They're the ones who are evoking the imagery now.
That would be true, but I don't know, man.
So, all I'm saying is, like, I mean, trust me, I'd take a quest where I got to choose, you know, wisely. Like, I'd be cool with that. Let me think here. So, I'm trying to think, like, mechanically. You have things like fairies. Like, I don't think that – it doesn't seem like fairies are going to be as big as maybe the
– No. That's the biggest joke, because, like, Mara was like, fairies aren't going to be, like, anything, like, hugely, like, emphasized in the set compared to, like, anything else within it. So,
Yeah, I guess I don't know. Yeah, I guess I'll stick with Exalted. I like quests. That's good. All right, equipment makes sense.
Yeah.
So
I just, you know, like thinking about it, and they have a lot of good things. Like, I don't know anything about like the Grimm's Fairy Tales. Like, I think that's going to be where the new, like, obviously that new mechanic is probably going to be what's sort of taking that feel from from the source material.
Yeah, whatever. It does look interesting.
Yeah.
I'll take a real shot in the dark. I wonder if there'll be like a cycle of like walls. Walls tend to be associated with castles.
Oh, okay.
So like
just reprint castle.
Yeah.
Done.
Castle's a bad card. So the original Planeswalker design
Lorwyn?
Garfield. There we go. From Garfield himself was like the idea of like having buildings that had like a life total that you had to like break down. Like, so it was, I think it was called fortifications. If I remember correctly, it was called fortifications, and that those became planeswalkers because like they became loyalty and they had abilities. But I wonder if they could go back into that well, because like, again, like if castles are important, like you got to protect your castle.
Yeah.
Get your creatures in your castle.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, we already got moat piranhas, so there we go.
Ooh, that's nice. I like that. I put moat piranha around my castles.
Yeah.
So
perfect.
So maybe we'll get some sort of like walls matter. Somehow, I mean,
just in time for Arcades to leave, like, the format.
You still have high alert though.
There, I mean, that's true.
So that's probably a real stretch, but in my mind, castles are something that comes to mind.
It would be bold of them to change like the limited format from like used to be blue white flyers, now blue white walls.
you had some of the one of the familiars was like a castle, right? With Sunscape familiar, it still sees play on Pauper. I think it's like a 1/3 defender or something like that. It's a castle. You put your banners on it. Maybe that could be something too.
Banners. Yeah. That's something that we haven't seen in a while. Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool.
Lots of interesting things that could definitely exist. So, at least you're probably going to be safe keeping your 2/2 Knights with Vigilance around for a bit longer.
I also say this also because Morrow just loves these things. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some kind of flip cards. When I think of, now, granted, maybe that's what the storybook is, but when I see like the the Frog Prince, for example, you know, like whatever your kiss mechanic is, and they flip him.
Yeah.
And then he's a big, strong, burly guy.
Yeah.
He was a frog because he's been cursed that way. And then he goes and, I don't know, becomes a frog again. Oops.
And like, I think that's a pretty like common theme within like these, you know, stories.
It's transformation.
Yeah. So maybe. I could see that.
Yeah. But, I mean, again, we just had more double face cards in Ixalan, so maybe they're not going to go back to that well so quickly.
Probably not, but you never know. I mean, again, it could just be a handful of them. It doesn't need to be like a main theme within the set. You know, I think they did a pretty good job of like sprinkling them in and still being able to pull it off. So. Yeah. So the next exciting thing, which is probably something that you are somewhat more excited about.
Oh, yes.
Is Brawl support. Is they are going to be doing it up kind of big for Eldraine. We've already kind of seen some of the things that they're doing. They're going to be releasing pre-constructed Brawl decks, which is very exciting. Which is a sort of a great onboard way to onboard people into the format. These decks will actually include unique cards as well. That are not going to be able to be opened in boosters, not traditional draft boosters, I should say. They can be opened in your collector's packs, though. The first example we have of this is Arcane Signet, which is 2 generic for an artifact. And it says, tap, add 1 mana of any color in your commander's color identity. So this, you know, is a mana rock for all of your Brawl decks, pretty much. Does it work? Does it work with like the colorless commander that Golos?
I don't. Golos is not a colorless commander. Golos is a 5-color commander.
Sure. So, but that counts as a color identity, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But like a true colorless commander, like a Karn, for example.
Yeah.
No. Would not tap for mana.
Perfect.
So, you want to talk about the legend too? They revealed.
Yeah. So. The legend. Now, I believe this is going to be able to. This is a mythic from Eldraine based on the collector's number, which is Shulane, I want to say. Teller of Tales, which is 2 generic, green, white, blue. So he's Bant. He is a 2/4 legendary creature, human druid, with vigilance, and has some text on it. It says, whenever you cast a creature spell, draw a card, then you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield, and then it has an activated ability. A 3 generic tap, return to a creature you control to its owner's hand. So is this Chaucer? Is this what this is trying to to evoke here?
Ostensibly, maybe? I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, storytellers in the Middle Ages.
Sure, fair enough. But that's like the first thing I thought of with like the at least the CH sort of beginning of the name. But,
sure.
This card, first of all, seems like a fairly good like brawl slash, you know, commander card. It's, you know, has 3 color identities, obviously works with, you know, within that color alignment, definitely has a lot of creatures with enter the battlefield abilities. Definitely has a lot of things going for it, for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is actually going to be one of the commanders in the Brawl deck from the pre-destructed Brawl decks
There's
as well.
There's going to be 4 total, right? So.
And then I think the biggest news, honestly, for Brawl is it's coming to Arena. And I think that this is going to, it's 1v1, so it's not the free-for-all that some people might be used to sort of playing Brawl in.
So I play Brawl as 1v1, so.
But I think this is going to be good because people love the singleton format. They want that to be sort of an evergreen format that's available in Arena, and this is hopefully a way that it will be. I can't imagine them not supporting it like they're going to be supporting Heroic. Not Heroic, Historic. And it just seems like they would be pretty short-sighted if they didn't, if they just had it for, like, special events that you had to enter into, but it wasn't, like, a persistent format. But I imagine there being, like, events for it, and then, like, a casual queue for it. And then, of course, you can always direct challenge people.
Right.
That's what I would imagine the support to look like, or at least that's what I want it to
really
look
cool
like.
It would be really cool to have a friends list by the time that comes out.
That would be fantastic.
But at least we'll have probably a cat still.
Yeah, probably. But hey, maybe we'll get a new pet with Eldraine. It'll be, you know, a fairy or something. I
that'd
don't know.
That'd be funny. That'd be the only fairy in the set.
That'd be hilarious. I'm excited about this because I think this is a cool way to be able to play the game and not have to always keep up with, like, Standard. Standard, that can be exhausting, especially if you're like a free-to-play player. Then, you know, being able to build a Brawl deck is a lot different than having to build a Standard deck. And, you know, this is a way that you can get more people into the client. This is a way that people can build up to something substantial early and still do like maybe events with it and be able to grind and then like build up to a, you know, a tier 2 standard deck and then like so on and so forth. So it snowballs. It gets people in one way and then maybe, oh, well, actually I want to draft the set a lot. So now I'm going to buy drafts. It does what, you know, the Arena team wants you to do, which is be in the client as much as possible, which is what the Mastery system before they changed it wanted you to do. So adding more to it, I can't hurt it. You know what I mean? So are you going to jump on in whenever it comes on?
Yeah,
build some decks?
I want to talk a little bit about it.
Yeah.
I'm very happy it's getting supported. I have literally talked face-to-face with Gavin Verhey twice now about Brawl and wanted to get it back. Now, of course, I know that, again, probably play Brawl a little bit differently than most people. Our play group has close to 30 decks, and we play entirely 1v1. We did a little bit of multiplayer last year for our end-of-season tournament, but we're not doing that this year. Like, we like playing at 1v1 because we're fairly competitive players, so the multiplayer part of it isn't what excites us. So I know that we enjoy the format differently than others do, and that's kind of how these things work. But I'm glad to see it not just die and have a chance to come back. There's still some ups and downs with this. I'm glad for the pre-con decks. That's cool. I'm very excited for Arena. Like, again, like that is something that I will have a chance to play a bunch and try out some. Even for me, I'll just try out some decks before I build them in paper. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. that. I like that idea. I'm not a big fan of them dipping their toes into the same thing they do with like regular Commander, which is like these mechanically unique cards, as they're calling them. So the ones that you just talked about, like specifically Arcane Signet, the one that we've gotten, bothers me. Do not like it. One of the nice things about Brawl is that it doesn't have to have staples, if that makes sense. Like, we have a lot of different Brawl decks, and while there's like overlap of certain cards, there's not a card that every single Brawl deck has to have. know what I mean? Not even like treasure map is, you know, like right now. It would be the kind of card that would feel ubiquitous, and it's just not. And the Signet is. It's ubiquitous. It's just like, well, yeah, you're going to play a 2-mana rock in every deck because it's better than standards had in
years. Yeah.
What's the last time we had a 2-mana rock?
The technically, one, you had like
the
a
stone from
Ixalan blocks. Well, yeah, the Ixalan block one. That, but it's for specific. It's not just universal, right? It's a for, oh, it's for creatures. It's for
creature types. You're, yes, right. I was thinking of the one where you have to like have a card of that color in the graveyard.
Yeah.
From the, yeah, the most recent, you know, Shadows of Innistrad block. Yeah. Yeah, I forgot. You're right. There is one for creature, but like we don't, you don't get 2-mana rocks.
No.
So like printing one here, I know it's a way to sell the decks. I get it. It's a way to make commander players want to buy the decks, and that's the point. But it seems really frustrating to me when, like, you're like, yeah, the whole point is you can use your standard cards. Well, except for these 7 mechanically unique cards that we're going to print that you have to put in all of your decks, that bothers me. I don't like them. I don't like them doing that. So we've already discussed about just kind of banning the Signet from our playgroup.
I mean, like, this is it's difficult, right? Because you want them to pay attention to your their format, yeah, and they want you. They want to do something to make your format, like, make the format special, right? Make it unique. And it's hard, I think, like, with...
It is, though. It is unique. It's literally only standard. It's a rotating, like, singleton format. Like, inherently, the card pool is what makes it unique. That's the whole point. Why do I need other things?
Because people aren't interested in it.
I guess so.
Like, period. Like, you, like, we can't dance around the subject. It's like, Brawl, no one cares about Brawl.
It's,
you care about Brawl, and I care about Brawl. Hold on.
That statement is so demonstrably untrue that it's laughable. And I don't mean that as, like, maybe attacky as that sounds. But, like, even reading his article, if we're talking about, like, oh, look, it is Hasbro the whole time, they're not going to do something that's going to just, like, flat out lose money. So if they did not actually have the feedback that Gavin Verhey's talking about, then they would not be supporting this product.
Okay. So
I'm not saying it's a massive thing or anything, no, but it's no tiny leaders. It didn't just die.
No. Well, first of all, it's an official sanctioned format by WotC. Sure. So they made the choice to make that official. But they
deleted it for a little while from their own, like, from Magic Online for a long time. It's not even a playable format on there. So
sure.
There has to have been some legitimate push from people that Verhey's talking about,
so
for it to get pushed back. Otherwise, they just wouldn't do it.
Sure. Then I think that the legitimate push, based on what we're seeing with it, right, with it becoming a card with its own specialty card set that's going to be, you know, within standard, then I have to think that people were pushing for it to have that, to be that way, if that makes any sense.
So you're saying they were specifically saying, we only want Brawl if you design Soul Rings for it.
Well, I mean, like, the Signet's not Soul Ring, but if you do not, it is.
Ubiquity, it is Soul Ring. That's why every EDH deck, every commander deck comes with Soul Ring, and it's, every single one of these is going to come with Arcane Signet.
I can't imagine people not wanting specialty cards for their format. Having cards that are staples, are things that are that essentially help you build decks. This does help you build a deck.
That's the whole point of a precon. It helps you build a deck.
Correct.
Should print specialty cards for the tournament decks, too, to help people build those decks.
But I mean, like,
we should put Arcane Signets in those things.
So people who are interested in commander products, right? They want to be able to build with certain cards, certain characters, right?
Of course.
So this allows them to have a card specifically designed for them, mm-hmm, that allows them to fix their mana and fix their colors and have an easier time building their deck without having to rely on standard to do that.
Then what's the point? Without having to rely on standard to do that, what's the actual effing point?
Well, without having to rely on...
We don't want you to rely on the card pool for the format to build decks, because that would be stupid.
I just feel like
I'm sorry. Their motivation has to come from somewhere,
right?
Their motivation comes from they're trying to get commander players to buy it. That's the motivation, because this is a commander playable card. This is one of the better cards in commander, more than likely.
Potentially.
So they can double their sales by dipping, which is probably, don't get me wrong, again, it's not like Brawl's breaking records or anything, so that's probably one of the ways they had to design it so they could get it out the door, mm-hmm, so it would appeal to both parties. I can still think that, like, that's weird, because, like, I don't understand what the appeal of Brawl is if you also felt like you needed these cards. I don't understand that. What is the appeal of Brawl if you also felt like you needed special cards for your deck?
I mean, the appeal for I don't know, building any deck, right?
Is it?
So,
compared to Commander.
Sure.
Because it's specifically what the comparison is.
Cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why, because you don't have to buy a bunch of stupid staples.
Yeah, but...
this card's going to be expensive.
It's also going to be in a precon that you can just buy.
Right. And I mean, it'll still be for a common. It should just be, you know, you can't buy in packs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean,
you can buy in the collector's pack. The
precon itself, I can't imagine the precons being like...
I'm sure they're $20.
I don't think so.
You think they're going to be
$10? I think they're going to be around the same price as the Planeswalker decks, and they aren't $20.
Planeswalker decks are $15.
They aren't $20, though. And they Planeswalker decks come with two booster packs,
yeah,
so they'll
but
be less.
Planeswalker decks also come with purposely designed trash in them. This is going to come with at least, what, one inset mythic?
Oh, but, I mean, like, you can't necessarily...
Here's the thing. So you're telling me that these are going to be super cheap, but also will make it encourage people to build around it. Because if you give me a $10 Brawl precon,
I mean, I imagine this being the same price as the Planeswalker decks, maybe like a dollar cheaper or something like that. Maybe like
so
15.
Then they won't be playable. This is a three color commander.
Sure,
I think these are going to be $20 to $30.
I think you're insane if you think that much. And
then
they're
how
trying
are you going to build a mana base?
Badly. It's going to be a bad...
What's the actual point?
But I mean, like, we've seen this kind of product...
Of course, but then, like, you're...
Look at the...
Look at this precon, I get this signet, makes it easier for me to build around my favorite commander, but I also get a bunch of stupid gates and gain lifelands, which actually doesn't help me at all.
You'll probably get, like, one rare land, maybe two.
So you get a Scryland?
But I mean, like, look at the... So this is a similar product. Look at the standard Challenger decks. So those are at a more expensive price point than, like, $15.
Yeah.
But they still are more value than what you get, right?
Right.
So who's to say that they still can't do that with this?
I think the basement cost on this is 15 if you're lucky, but I think it's going to be 20 to 30.
I think if that's the case, then that's like a harder pill to swallow. But I think
they're going to sell like commander decks. This tells me that they're going to be like commander decks.
But I mean, like commander decks have 100 cards in them.
Yep,
you're getting less cards than that.
Yep, 100%
at that point in time. So I don't know. I think that we definitely have to hold our judgment until we see the price.
Oh
point.
No, see, I don't. I'm happy with Brawl, and I'm sure those Brawl precons will be something I'm interested in looking at. But my opinion on these kind of cards don't change. That doesn't have to be everyone's opinion, and that's totally fine.
Sure.
Like, I'm not saying that you have to feel this way or not. I do think that the arguments offered here aren't good. I'm trying to not be rude.
I mean, like, clearly this is the way that they think that they can onboard people into Brawl.
Of course it is. But it frustrates me because, like, you make a card like this that's ubiquitous, and, like, so, like, for every Brawl deck I have to have one of these. And it's really frustrating.
I suppose, but I also think that they don't expect everyone to have a billion Brawl decks.
I mean, I guess, like, a billion's strong. How many commander decks do most people actually have?
I don't know about most people. It's hard to... I mean... I would say that it as far as, like... I don't know.
I think Keller goes over the limit of what normal people have, but I currently have 7 Brawl decks, and I think when I see people playing Commander who have their boxes with them, like, I'm assuming they have a minimum of four decks.
Sure.
Right? So you have to have 4 copies of this card, so you just buy all 4 precons, and Watsy's happy. Like, and of course, you don't have to put one of these in each one of your decks, but then your deck's just not as good as someone else's. That's fine. And you know that. And Watsy knows that.
Yeah, but people still play... less than optimal standard decks. They still play less than optimal modern decks.
They do.
For sure. So you can still play something certainly less than optimal and still have fun.
Maybe, I guess.
I think, like, your need for competitiveness also clouds...
No, I don't disagree with that. I don't. I really don't. I don't know. I feel very strongly that I don't need specific Brawl cards in these precons. I just want... Like, the whole point is it's just standard cards. Yeah. I just don't care. Like, why do we have to go out of our way to make... I don't get it. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to get it.
I mean, like...
We created a format with a very, very specific build condition on it. Now, let's break open a corner of it and stick some more cards in it that don't need to be there. But don't worry. Still very specific build conditions.
I think it's hard to. I think it's hard for them. Where I think it's hard for them to decide where to go with this, right? As far as like what audience they're trying to capture, they're trying to capture the Commander audience. I'm
trying to capture Pokemon.
They're not trying to capture. They gave away. Actually, they gave away that property. They don't even make those cards anymore.
I don't think they gave it away.
Gave it away might be gracious to Watsy.
Something tells me they would still be printing Pokemon cards if they were allowed.
So they're trying to. They're trying to attach the audience. They know it works with that audience because they already make Commander precons. So why not take that same formula and put it into Standard? I know that you don't like this because you enjoy the building restriction of Brawl as it currently stands.
And I think that's the point.
Not everyone enjoys that, though.
That's the point of the format.
But I think people disagree on what that... I don't think people think that's the point of the format. The point of the format is to have a way that you can still play less than popular Standard cards, right? You get to play more Standard cards than you would.
That doesn't make any, sense to me. That's like saying every format has its build restrictions... except for the caveat of where we can make more money off of you. So, you know, like you, this goes back to you, like being upset about Nexus of Fate. Well, then you got to be fine with Nexus of Fate. You can't be upset about that. It's a Standard format, which is a build restriction, but they just slapped a few extra cards and you got to buy more. And it's okay. It's fine. It's absolutely okay. Here, you know what? Here's Popper precons, and we took one specific card we just created for Popper and put it in each one of those, and it's going to be great in Popper. You can just ignore it if you want, but. You know, it's commons, okay. Except for this.
Fine. Then it's bad and trash, and I can't believe that they're doing this, and they're ruining your format.
I did it.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
They're ruining your format that people might be more interested in.
I'm allowed to, like, enjoy the – I'm very happy for all these announcements. I'm allowed to look at that one thing and go, this is a poxmark. I hope that we quarantine it and it dies.
I think if that's what you think about it, then they're just going to give up on Brawl.
So here's what we're going to do. We're gonna lead a coalition together. When I say we, I'm talking about you, the listener. This has to be all of us together. So you buy Brawl precons. Send pictures to Watsy of you like, hey, I bought this. But I am burning these 7 unique mechanical cards that you gave me in solidarity with Mike from At Your End Step. Mm-hmm. And if we all do it, they'll make the money from buying it. And they'll go, okay, you want Brawl precons, but you don't want these cards that you burned. And it will be a movement.
I would be interested. I wish that we could get someone that actually, like, that like a Garrett Gavin Barry. I wish we could actually, like, understand why they decided to go with this.
Here's the thing. I'll be honest. I'll send him a message. He's responded to me a number of times about this. So maybe I can get him to come talk about Brawl. Like, hey, I have harassed you a bunch of times. And if you've not blocked me yet for harassing you about Brawl, can you come talk about Brawl?
Because it just feels like a move to get more people interested in the format. Sure. And to, like, do you not want more people to be interested in the format?
No. Again, maybe I can very objectively say that my hard-line stance here may be ridiculous. It might be. I'm passionate when I talk about things. So let me get real for a second and bring you into the real me. I think that... it is frustrating when you say here's a format that yes, I personally have latched onto and I like the build restrictions of the format. It does seem weird to say, okay, we're going to keep that except caveats are frustrating to me. And I think it strikes me the same way that the BioBox promo strike me where it's like, if you want a card to be in the format, right, then just put it in the format. You know what I mean? The Planeswalker decks get away with it kind of because they're so bad. But even then, they've had some weird, you know, miscues on that. When Lightning Blast was like $4 a card because there wasn't a way to kill Gideon in the format. That's weird. It's weird that you make it so hard to get those things. And then the flip side is, well, of course, I don't actually have to buy a Brawl Precon to get that card. I can just buy a $30 pack where it might be in the pack because it's one of that section. You know, the delivery method is frustrating, right? Because like the only way I have now been part of this grassroots movement to keep this format alive, and I'm rewarded with you must give us this money. I already give you a ton of money, literally, to play this format. You know what I mean? So I get it. My reaction here could be totally unfounded, and maybe the entire reason you, listener, are excited about Brawl is because you saw that signet, and I want to dampen that. Like, enjoy it. Please come play Brawl. Come play Brawl with me. I won't play it with a group of friends with you. I'm very sorry. I will play you one-on-one. Because that is how I want to play Brawl, okay? So I don't know. Maybe we can become friends on Arena someday, and then we can play Brawl that way. But I think, like, it's just weird. And it's also going to be awkward because, like, on Arena, I just have to burn a common wild card to build one of those. And then every Brawl deck I have will have a copy of it.
And I are you... It's common wild card, man.
Yeah. That's what, no, I'm saying like that the access, the accessibility is such a drastic shift that's frustrating. It is frustrating to me because I don't want to have that. And like, what happens when in rotation then? Is this literally Sol Ring? If we're going to have Brawl decks for every set, is every set going to have four of these signets in it? And that just is – it just – I don't know. Maybe this is how Commander players feel all the time. Like, I know a lot of people are upset about the bans and they feel like it's like some shadowy cabal. And it's not. It's not. It's very – very people out in the public who definitely are like trying to explain to you the reasonings, don't be off of those people. Like, seriously. But, like, I guess maybe I get some of that frustration where it's like, okay, I want you to like my format. But also, don't mess with it. Just, like, support it. But don't touch it. But, like, support it. But don't touch it.
I don't.
But, like, support it.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
I don't know either.
I'm the consumer. All right? I'm not the maker. I'm the consumer.
I get it. I get it. I understand. And I'm sorry that they have affected your precious baby in a way that you dislike.
Yeah, it's okay. It'll survive. Quite literally, it will not survive. So,
but good news, they don't have like sanctioned Brawl tournaments. Maybe they will these days.
I mean, he said there's going to be a Brawl weekend.
Yeah,
but
it's multiplayer. So like,
and like you also just win like Arena Cosmetics, which
who cares? Just so proxy this.
Here's the best part. Come play on paper on this special weekend, play multiplayer Brawl, then take your cosmetic item so you can only go play 1v1 Brawl.
Yeah, I don't. You got me. Again, that is a weird split that they've decided to try and make between the people they're trying to appeal to and the limitations of Arena.
No, I don't disagree. I really am happy for all of this. Like, I'm being very nitpicky about one thing because I'm very passionate about this one thing. It just is. I don't think it's wrong to be that way because that's what makes us like passionate about those things. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you're a cube enthusiast and you know you have a pauper or a peasant cube, and how do you treat downshifts? How do you treat cards from these products?
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, do you embrace them? Do you not use them? Like, I think all opinions are valid on that.
But do you worry that it comes off as like so the people that are interested in the format because they are going to give some of these sort of ubiquitous cards that make it a little bit easier to build decks that maybe have difficult mana bases currently or something like that. Do you look at it and sound like you being negative about this means that, you know, that sort of gatekeepy or something like that?
Because
that's what I would worry about, right?
I guess, by me being upset about a signet, I'm gatekeeping Brawl?
No, by you... So, you being... Saying that you are above this card, if that makes any sense.
Oh, I don't feel like I'm above this card. That's not what I'm saying about this. I'm not better than this card. I'm just saying that it frustrates me to be there. You know, like, again, we're talking about build restrictions, you know what I mean? If I'm going to... You built a battle box that was all Innistrad, right?
Yeah.
Except for that one card you really liked from Urza's Destiny. You know it didn't really fit into the build restriction, but no. You just like it a lot. You know what I mean? Like, build restrictions are interesting to me, and I think as a deck builder are interesting. That's why different formats exist.
Sure.
So I don't know why you would take a format that has such a very specific and honestly at times small. When Eldrain comes in, it's going to be a small format.
Yeah.
That's exciting to me. And you only have 60 cards in there. So you're going to tell me that, like, you, the designer, right, are going to print a card that is so obscenely better than anything in the format. And a 2-mana, any color you need signet is better than anything in that format mana-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So you are, from a, not even a competitive, from a competent build point.
Yeah.
Then I now have a 59-card deck.
So
do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but so what's worse is having this card give access to being able to play maybe a legendary, something they put in the set for standard reasons, for standard power level, but not have a mana base that could potentially support it in Brawl, if that makes any sense. So
maybe, but I think you have to come
to a compromise,
if you're
right?
Buying that pre-con. Right, even especially if it's $15, right? You're buying that pre-con, it's $15. That signet's not making your mana base playable in the first place.
Not
even close to playable compared to a real deck. So you're not threading that needle, anyways.
Depends on
if it's a $30 deck, maybe that's where we're at. But then you're paying $30 for 60 standard cards. 53 standard cards. Because let's be quite honest, that card's not actually playable in standard. It might be standard legal,
yeah,
which is hilarious to me, that a card that references a commander, it's standard legal, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it that won't do anything.
Yeah, but it's weird. I don't know. I don't know. It's complicated. It's certainly complicated, and it's. I'm not suggesting the format only revolves around me. I'm suggesting that this is my damn podcast, at least partially.
I get it.
So I can say what I want.
You know, just how different people view different things. Like, people might say, like, "Oh, well, you are saying that you enjoy the restrictions, that you're a better deck builder than someone who might need to, you know, rely on these specific cards."
No, and I'm being very honest. I think you're grasping there. Like, I think you're a step away from suggesting that, like, my ownership of standard cards, like, because I happen to have Shocklands and another person doesn't, that's me being above them or gatekeeping. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think you can just look at the concept of, like, owning a thing as gatekeeping. I don't look at Commander as, like, other Commander players are gatekeeping me out of their format because their cards are expensive. You know what I mean? Like, that's not how this works. I'm not upset about the expense of this card, even though it has a chance to be expensive. I'm upset about the ubiquity. That's all. That's literally it. You know what I mean? I said I compare it to Sol Ring. Sol Ring is a card that bothers me in Commander because it's a ubiquitous card. And, like, games were wildly different when one player had Sol Ring and others did not. Like, that isn't fun to me. That's just, now your deck is literally 99 cards instead of 100. You know what I mean?
I get it.
So I'm certainly, if it comes off as I'm trying to, that's not it. Like, I want people into the format. And I'm not, if we ban it from our play group and you sit across from me and you play a second, we don't play with that here. That's not what I'm going to say. But, like, I do think, like, it's relevant to look at it and I think it's okay to be frustrated by it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
I just, you know, exploring it as far as that goes.
Well, we printed Jace the Mind Sculptor out on Common in this Commander precon because we just did. It was a misprint. It just happens to have the silver on it. Well, I'm going to put up my cube then.
I mean, that's an extreme example.
It's uncommon.
And you know it. You know that's an extreme example.
Obviously it is.
But
it's called hyperbole, man.
I get it.
Welcome to the show.
I understand. I don't know.
I hope you're all still with us. We do talk about other things on the show. And Brawl's just near and dear to me. Here's the thing. If you want me to talk about Brawl more, I will tell you about all my decks. I'll go into all the intricacies. Let me know. Just reach out.
It just... I don't know.
I think I'm going to do some writing about it for legit.
It's just, I just wish that there was, like, some secret thing that they could do to, like, make the entrenched player. And this is, you know, the constant WotC thing and the constant Magic thing is, like, you could, you know, fold a $100 bill. And I'm not saying this is what they're doing, but fold the $100 bill in a booster pack and people will still complain. It's like, you're not going to please everyone.
No, of course not. And, like, and I'm not really complaining about value.
It's not even a conversation about, like, value or anything. It's like you, they are, like... to put it in, like, a meme terms, but, like, Senpai is noticing you, and
it's... Did you say meme?
A meme way.
Why'd you say meme?
I don't know, man. We've been talking about Brawl for, like, the past half hour.
Yeah, when you say meme, I literally picture the character from the Drew Carey show.
No, don't worry. We're... Same thing. Cleveland rocks. But it is just so... I don't know. It just feels like... I see something, like, maybe because I'm not so invested in it, but I see them, like, oh, look, they're doing something. And then it's just so disappointing. I just feel disappointed. I'm in my friends because, like, I want them to be happy about something.
Here's the thing. I'm not upset. I'm very happy with the Brawl cards. I'm very happy for the Brawl commanders. The Vault precons. Like, that's cool. That should get people into the format. I do disagree with what the price point's going to be, and we'll see what that will end up looking like. But, like... I still think I'm allowed to be upset about, like...
No, I don't want to... I don't, like, want to deny
my, and this is where I think, like... I think it's where the, like, internet rhetoric has harmed everybody, including us sitting here. Because, like, I'm not really... I definitely... I was arguing earlier a little tongue-in-cheek, which makes it sound like I'm trying to win, and I apologize for that. But, like, at the end of the day, like, I can point at one thing I'm criticizing and still like the whole thing. Like, this does not mean, like, well... Burn, like, literally just don't release them. That's not what I'm saying. Okay. But yeah, I can be upset that, like, this one card is going to be in all of them. And that bothers me. So I'm not going to boycott the product. Collector's packs. Yeah. I'm going to boycott that product.
Yeah. That's an easy one. That's slam dunk hate right there. But
and by boycott, I mean be too poor to buy it.
Yeah.
Huh. That's gatekeeping.
All right. So moving on, before we go into competitive, because there is a second half of the show, if you can believe it.
What?
We do want to give.
I'm so tired, Morgan.
We want to give a quick shout out to Comic Town. If you are interested in checking out more about them, you can go to worldcomictown.com. That's where you can check out their comic book podcast that they have. It's black, white, and red all over. So be sure to check it out, and of course, check out any sort of upcoming magic events in their calendar, which they have set up very nicely, so you can see what is going to be happening when they have like a Star City Games at Qer or something like that coming down the pipeline. So check that out. All right, competitive. So we had a GP that literally, I mean, like...
Us talking about it right now is more coverage than I had this weekend.
100%. Even so much, like, barely anyone showed up, so it was GP Denver. It was standard. It had a total player count of 616 in the main event. That is shockingly low. You said it was the lowest since...
So this is from April King again, who's quickly... Great Twitter follow.
Yeah, just do
just
it.
Just chock full of awesome just information. But yeah, she said that it is the lowest attended US GP since GP Providence 2006, which was like 640.
That's wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
It's also not surprising, it seems, that people have been listening to you know, the things that we say and don't go to GPs because they're a waste of money.
We did it.
We did it. Movement. I'm gonna take that win.
A lot of people did say there were a lot of people that are playing side events. So like like if you went into the room, you may not have immediately noticed anything.
Yeah.
Which honestly maybe WotC's plan. Maybe they don't care if GPs are 400 people if there's still 1,000 people in the room.
Yeah. And I'm sure they probably, like, overall make more money on side events than they do on the GP.
Here's the thing. I don't actually know what the how WotC makes money directly off of those. Like,
maybe that's true, I guess. So they may not.
Yeah. They certainly are doing fine by not paying any coverage teams.
Yeah.
So, and like the coverage, to be fair, the coverage team that would normally be there won the GP. So.
Yeah. So we can move on to that. So congratulations to Louis Scott Vargas. For taking down the...
He's got a bright future.
I'm pretty sure. I wasn't even going to make, like, a bright up-and-comer, like, LSV joke, because they're not even, like... They're not even that funny anymore. Everyone knows who LSV is. He's clearly, like,
it's funny
a
this
great
time,
and powerful
though,
magician.
Because, one, he's definitely one of those people who, like, it's awkward that he's not an MPL member, right?
Yeah.
And it certainly has to do with his actual work schedule.
Yeah.
But
he has a real job.
Yeah, like a real job. But like also just because like the way that he just like his persona, especially on social media, is just hilarious. Like Friday, he was like locked in on, you know, Black White Vampires. But actually, he literally said he's getting FOMO about Scapeshift and started asking for cards. The best part about this, did you see this?
Yes.
So he asked who had all these awful, you know, all the awful comments and uncommons for this deck, which we're going to talk about, including Arboreal Grazer, which is a card that he absolutely hates.
Yeah.
And Nathan Storier is the one who was like, hey, I've got these
for you. I've got like a double playsets of everything you could possibly need for this deck.
Which is Banned Scapeshift.
Yep.
And then Nathan won the Sunday MCQ.
Yes.
Playing the same deck. So, deck's good.
Apparently. I mean, it had... I don't know if this is correct. But it has four in the top eight?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
So there were four in the top eight, and then Nathan Holliday, former Star City writer, had a Sultai build of this with Golos.
Yeah,
that was it was like ninth. I think it might be an actual ninth or just outside. Just outside.
Gotcha.
So yeah, Scapeshift did real well this weekend.
Yeah, and you know, I know that LSV had a post-winning stream later on that night that I watched a little bit of, and he was like, "Yeah, it was kind of like the perfect storm because." When I first heard of the deck, because if I heard about it, like, he's like, if people heard about it too early, then the deck wouldn't have been good and people would have been prepared for it. And if it was, like, too late, then I couldn't have slid into the deck. So he, like, heard about it at the right time, was able to get into it, like, the Friday before the tournament, and, like, it just crushed that tournament.
Yeah, should we point out, this deck is Andrei Strosky's build. Literally card for card. Most of the players in the top, I think in the top eight, just copied his deck list and sideboard guide.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of proves that what we've been saying all along is correct. How long until people remember Teferi's a card?
Yeah, you're not kidding.
And they remembered. They all remembered.
Yeah.
It didn't show up in Esper, but Teferi is still a messed up Magic card.
Yeah, it's when you literally... So, again, we don't have any real coverage, but there were some people live tweeting. I remember there was one person in particular live tweeting the finals. can't remember who that was, and I apologize. But essentially, I guess Star City had – not Star City. Channel Fireball had a write-up on their website a little bit about this. But essentially, he got paired against Simic in the finals, which he even said was not a very good matchup. But in both cases, Teferi was just a house stopping Nexus from doing what it needs to do. And then he just flashed in Scapeshift at the end of turn for lethal.
Yeah. Because
that's what you should be able to do.
Because, I mean, like, the main, win condition that we, look at with these kind of lists is the land, the...
Field of the Dead.
Field of the Dead, that's what it is. And, being able to use Teferi to cast your sorcery at instant speed to instant speed get 35, I guess always, is it always an even number? No, it can be an odd number because you can have different, an obscene amount of zombies. A very, very lethal amount of zombies at the end of your opponent's turn is really hard to combat. And people just weren't prepared to figure out a way to do that effectively. It does remind you of a lot of the way that Scapeship kills in modern with Valakut. And they obviously don't do that at instant speed. So you get to be really, be very tricky. And this deck has a lot of resiliency that you don't necessarily think about. It does have some weaknesses. I know that LSV was like, you definitely don't want to see like an Unmoored Ego.
he said he won a game where he got Unmoored Ego.
Yeah,
they unmoored his Field of Dead. He won with just a giant Hydra Crisis. Like,
yeah,
what a machine!
Yeah, it's just, there are multiple avenues of victory for this deck, and it just functions on an axis that a lot of people weren't ready to fight it against. In this current format, so
we should talk about that. Like I will say this. I played some Arena last night, and I actually managed to break through Diamond. Got some Mythic.
Congratulations.
So I was like, cool. Did it with Mono Red. Literally nice. All the way, because I was like, whatever. And then I played 4 or 5 matches in Mythic, and it was all against this deck.
Yeah.
And even playing with Mono Red, it was crazy how, as Mono Red, you had to be as efficient as possible, because this deck hits its 7 land drop with a field pretty consistently, and then it doesn't even have to do that much to be good against like the generic creature decks, where it's just like, here's a 2/2, here's another 2/2, here's a 2/2, and like, again, it can just hit it so quickly. Grazer's very good in this deck, just being a blocker and like putting those lands in. And so Scapeshift is like the pretty win condition, but the casual making of zombies, it can make it really hard to just close games against them, and then eventually they're going to draw it.
And like hilariously, they play a bunch of gain lands, which sometimes adds up.
It's a thing, and they're playing this crazy. There's 2 copies of Johnny's Welcome on the sideboard, which is a 1-mana white enchantment. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you gain a life. So sometimes, like you scapeshift, and you're like, well, I'm in a low life total. I might die even after I scapeshift. No, you don't. Actually, you gain a couple lives.
Oh, how about that?
So, it's just, lands is not where the format was set up to be. And it's not that they're saying there aren't cards that can play against this, but, Field of Ruin was absent right now. And, you literally can just play something like Alpine Moon, right? Like, that's in the format. But why would you have had a reason to? Just like you said, like, him saying he knew exactly what time, like, the exact time frame to play this deck. Now you might see somebody boarding Alpine Moon or Unmoored Ego, but...
Yeah, but it wouldn't have been on your radar. And it's just like, maybe you were playing like flame sweeps to get over the first like thing of zombies, the first big batch.
Right.
But I mean, if they're pulling 3 or 4 of their Field of Ruins with their Scapeshift, like, cool, you did it once. Can you keep doing it? Probably not.
Sorry, you linked to MTG Goldfish. Right now, if you click on Alan Sun's banned Scapeshift list, they definitely put 2 copies of it in the list. So it says it's an illegal deck because it has a 90-card sideboard.
Nice.
So that's pretty cool. 6 Veil of Summer.
That seems like too many.
Yeah, but like looking at these, like the main decks are identical, and most of the sideboards are identical as well. Like this deck really took a format by storm. I know Strosky was saying that he went something like 15-0 on it to get to like number 4 over the weekend, like on Arena. Like, this deck was real, and like, it probably is still real. Again, the format really isn't prepared to fight against this. You have to have the right Wrath spell. And even then, you have to be allowed to play at instant speed. And sometimes Teferi just says, nah,
no,
man. You don't get to do that.
No.
So, Yeah, that's pretty scary. We did some other decks that made the top 8, though.
We do. We have Boris Feather, Jeskai Super Friends, which is a deck that hasn't been around for a while, but also another Teferi deck. We have Orzhov Vampires, and then Simic Nexus, which was who else we defeated there in the finals. And yeah, it's just wild to you know, we see from like the top cards from this top 8, Teferi Time Raveler, you know, coming back with a vengeance, being like, I'm still probably the best card in this format.
Oh, absolutely.
And also Gross Spiral might be in the third place, Arboreal Grazer.
Okay, I don't know if we can actually trust any of the numbers, by the way, in this. Can you click on Aaron Hawkins' Vampires list? Click on it. It's also Bandscape Shift.
All right, I don't know what happened to MTG Goldfish, but I don't know what is actually correct or real anymore.
It's literally just taking it all over.
But see, here's the thing. I don't want to link to Channel Fireball's coverage either.
I don't blame you. If you click on Greg Keithley's
Is it also Nexus, is it just no, is but, it all just oh, a Bandscape Shift is slowly overtaking the rest of the decks?
The code is eating it. No, but it says it's an illegal deck because somebody forgot to hyperlink Nexus of Fate correctly. So it says others for Nexus of Fate foil buy box promo. Oh, man.
MTG Goldfish.
Oh, I'm making fun of you. You are great. Shout out to Eric Hawkins, who yeah. I will say I think Eric and LSV both got in at 12-3,
mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, again, that's not normally a thing at GPs. No,
certainly not.
But I think like Eric Hawkins is we talked about it a couple times in here. Just a grinder who just goes and plays hard, and I'm glad to see him doing well. So
yeah, for sure.
I also think Chris. Owen, I don't know how you say his last name, but apparently he's the video editor for both LSV and Gabby Sparks' stream, and he also nice. Top-8ed.
Nice.
So, it seems a little nepotism going on.
Oh, yeah, Is it, I think it's Molly Brook. I think that's his username, if that gotcha. Makes any sense. I think so. I'm not 100% sure, but I think so.
So, it goes without saying that we've already mentioned this, but, like, it would have been really cool to watch that. LSV is one of your most marketable faces.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, it had a good storyline. You know, you can be like, it's Twee's 12-3. He's not even supposed to be here and wins the whole entire thing. But you can't always predict that.
No, but, man, like, this is a format that if you're following Arena has been shifting a lot again with M20.
I see what you did there.
Well, yeah, wow, I did that on purpose. and I think, like, you just – it's so weird to just not highlight this. Like, Field of the Dead, like, this deck is such a – your Scape Shift coming back from the dead, that one's on purpose.
Okay.
You know, after not seeing no play at all, like, they build for it, and you have literally, like, Vampires is a flash-in-the-pan kind of deck because it's going to rotate out and be dead. Show it now! Yeah. Get people to buy the set right now! It is just bonkers to me. I was like, oh, cool. LC the top 8, I'm going to go watch that. And I was like, ha-ha, got me again.
Can't.
So
you could watch his victory stream, which was fun. It was a good time. People were literally having a party. He was at, I think, Sam Party, Matt Nass, I forget who else. They was at their house in Denver because they all work for Direwolf, for the Eternal People. Literally a party going on downstairs, and he's just streaming. Literally streaming the deck, and then he drafted it with 7-0 in a draft with an absurd draft deck. So just like he just couldn't stop winning. He's just like, I have to keep doing this.
You posted the day 2 archetypes,
yeah,
which I think is interesting because they put all the Esper builds together, but Esper was the second most played deck.
Mm.
Either it would be Esper Hero, they put it as Esper mid range, whatever it is. Followed by Feather, then Red Aggro. Mono Blue being so low sort of surprised me after its finish last week.
I wonder. I would like to see its actual conversion rate. That's what I would. I'd like to see its day one. Because like, look, think of all the Teferis that were in the room, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's interesting,
mm-hmm.
because I will say, like, outside of Teferi, like outside of that actual card, I feel like I'd want to be on the blue side for this Game Shift matchup. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, so maybe just Teferi is that good, but they don't have a lot of must counter spells at that point, and you don't care about the incidental zombies because you fly.
Yeah.
So I know another deck that's not showing up here, but is something to pay attention to as well as the Blue-White Skies deck is doing okay on Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also does fairly okay against, you know, these decks because one of the issues Mono Red against it is you just get brick-walled. Even when they're not going off, you just kind of get brick-walled and you lose a lot of access to damage. Mm-hmm. So The other thing here, Elementals, two copies in day two.
Yeah.
That's not good. That deck has been very popular, and I've enjoyed it, but it does feel like you're working real hard to do things that other decks are not working that hard to do.
Yeah. I think, like, you know, Elementals was like the zero, like the level zero deck, and I think people are just going past it. Like, you've found better avenues to go over the top or go under, and it's just like, and there's better mid range options, right? Yeah. So,
well, like Elementals was the ramp deck, but it's not as good as the other ramp decks, and the aggro version is definitely not as good as the other aggro decks. No, so
yeah, so, and if you're gonna play mid range, in all honesty, you might be looking at a feather deck, you might be looking at a Jund Dinosaurs deck.
That amazes me as well. That deck is pretty popular, and yeah, the 7/6 Dino seeing some play.
Right, yeah. We'll talk about it when we talk about the Open.
That's true.
So I think, like, Elemental is just, like, it's just not. There are now better decks that are trying to do the things that it was doing. And not to say, like, that synergy is something to take note of, you know, going forward, but I'm also not sure how much support you're really going to see
right
in Throne of Eldraine. Doesn't seem like a very elemental
heavy
set. Well,
so that's interesting, though. So MTG Goldfish, Saffron Olive, had his article about, like, what decks survive rotation. Elementals is a deck that loses almost nothing outside
of... Because,
so, like, they're not running Land of Elves right now.
Yeah.
And so, like, all their creatures are remaining legal.
So you may not have to have anything.
The land mana base will shift a little, but it's not much because it's mostly shocks.
True.
And you have a couple of Hinterland Harbors, but you could just play more temples.
Yeah.
So he did rate that as the deck that's most likely to remain. Like, it is the same deck post-rotation. So it might be down right now, but it might actually come back up for a little bit.
Interesting.
So it might rise.
Ah.
Like a reef.
Like a reef from the sea. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's cool to see, like, a deck like this kind of show up out of nowhere and really blindside the tournament. But still, it not be like Eldrazi winter sort of thing, which you won't see that one standard.
This is definitely like taking a metagame. The answers are here, but why you weren't playing them?
You didn't know this was going to happen. So, yeah. So I figured from this, we're going to talk about Star City Games Philly. That happened, but I figured we'd talk about the Standard Classic next and then roll into the Team Open. So Kane Reinhardt won the Standard Classic playing... Bant midrange. So this isn't the Scapeshift lift. He actually beat Ashford Smith playing Scapeshift. We also have another Scapeshift list in third place as well, but he was playing a more traditional non-Scapeshift Bant midrange list, so.
Ooh, boy.
Yeah?
I was looking at the sideboard.
You've seen some things?
I'm just trying to figure out, like why, because, like, it's cool that he won, but I was trying to see, like, what cards. And obviously, he has multiple copies of Deputy of Attention. It's pretty good against those decks. I'm looking at the one copy of the Settler Direction in the sideboard. I have to assume that's actually not very good against the it's like, oh, you exile all my zombies, I'm going to get all these lands and put them in play?
Yeah, maybe, you know, not great.
Yeah.
Maybe not great.
But not sign that one in too. So
yeah, Time Wipe is definitely something that you can do.
And I know Finale of Glory is another card that if you're both ramping matches up pretty well. So
yeah, making a bunch of angels is pretty nice.
It's not bad.
Yeah,
it's not bad.
We also have a couple mono red aggro lists, including Aaron Bear showing up in fifth place. So she's having a pretty good start to the Star City Games tournament series.
I think it's pretty interesting. So who's here? So she's still playing Ember Hauler. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's gone more traditional. And then the fourth place list by Gavin Ween is literally like the very traditional, like what mono red is right now. So maybe the Spitfire was just a 1 week kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but I do think it's interesting to still have Ember Hauler. I have not wanted it. Pyromancer does what you want, but I could see the argument, especially in the mirror. I could see the argument.
I mean, like, it just being 2/2 is probably just like significant.
Man, that extra mana to make it do anything is tough.
Being able to because it's any target, right?
Yeah.
Flexibility is nice though.
Don't get me wrong, it is. I
it's just mana intensive.
Yeah, it is mana intensive. So there's a Dylan Donegan played Jund Dinosaurs in this, huh?
Yeah.
Jeez.
So again, this is going to be something. Well, Jund Dinosaurs was the winning standard seed. It was piloted by Corey Baumeister. But this seemed to be the sort of default red green list. We don't see any Gruul you know, lists other than dinosaurs really show up and do well anymore. And they are, you know, stretching into to black for a few different things, one of them being Rotting Regisaur. And we also have some sideboard cards. So we have Cast Down on the sideboard, also Noxious Grass, which is the black, you know, hate spell that we have for green and white creatures, I guess. Or is it, or Planeswalkers as well. Yeah.
And Duress.
And Duress. Well, and like, those are, you know, powerful sideboard cards that we see out of this deck. And then, I think, like, you know, Rotting Regisaur really is kind of... It was kind of impressive in this deck, to be perfectly honest, mainly because of the Huntmaster, you know, being able to cast this on the cheap because it costs only one and a black at that point in time. And Kimmy can haste is a big deal. And I think like that's kind of the card that a lot of people were overlooking when they were like building with dinosaurs, and just being able to have like a bunch of cards in your deck that make all of your dinosaurs cheaper, and now you become like this insane, not insane, but very powerful sort of value deck where all of your things cost 1 to 2 mana, and including your Galza Primal Hungers, and then suddenly like they all have trample, they have haste, and like all your creatures are just better than anything that's going on the battlefield, and you can close out games amazingly fast. I know one of the games that I did watch, like he got to cast two like Regisaurs like back to back. It's just like that's 14 power, and like he couldn't attack with them, but he just closed out the game. It was like turn like 3 or 4. It was absurd.
Yeah, haste is really what, you know, will cure what ails you when you talk about things like Teferi as well. Like,
yeah,
you know, Teferi bounces are not quite the reset when they attack. You know, and they, so yeah, I've been surprised at how good these builds are in Uray. They snowball quickly. Like how quickly like these decks can put a Galta into play. It's kind of disgusting.
Yeah.
So,
but you know, looking at decks that I definitely like to play, this is something that would be right up my alley. It's a, you know, an aggressive mid range list that can just like close out games surprisingly fast. So, I'm definitely a fan. I don't have a reason to play standard really anytime soon, or to buy standard cards really anytime soon past like Brawl, I guess. So I probably won't be playing this deck, but I think it's pretty cool. Was there anything else in the classic that you kind of wanted to highlight? We do see Saltai Flash showing up.
Yeah, they're also splashing for just some removal spells. Yeah. So I believe also the Noxious Grasp.
That makes sense.
Got a ways to deal with Teferi.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
But yeah, if Teferi's back and forth in the format, if I'm going to play a blue deck like that, I'm just going to try to stay with mono blue. I think the blue-green flash decks have less ways to interact in those critical turns before Teferi.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've played against that deck on Arena, and their land drops were Island, Forest, Go, and it's just like, and I know you're playing Merfolk Trickster. I know you couldn't cast it. So it's a little rough. So
for sure.
Now we can talk about the open here a little bit. I don't know how much you want to talk about it, but
yeah, you know, I just wanted to you know, talk about the team that won, which gave us Corey Baumeister, Shaheen Sarani, and Pete Ingram. So it was the standard seat, the modern seat, and the legacy seat, respectively. They won the open. They were playing Baumeister again. Was playing Jund Dinosaurs. You'll never guess what Shaheen Sarani was playing.
I mean, to be fair, it's not Esper.
No, it's Azor. It's the only playable, realistically, the only playable control deck in Modern right at this point in time, Azorius Control. And then Pete Ingram was playing 4-color Delver. Now, I don't know how much of... So we had a problem in Legacy, right? We had the ubiquity of Deathrite Shaman, right? So we had all these 4-color Leovold decks that were running around. And people were like, oh, I can't... This format, like, it's just 4-color, you know, non-white Delver decks or non-white control decks, and it's just like, I can't stand this. And then they banned Deathrite Shaman, and we had like this brief moment of like, we can not have to worry about Deathrite Shaman anymore, so we could play a bunch of different decks. And then they printed Red and Six, and now everyone's like, oh, back to 4-color.
Yeah.
We did it. Well, they printed a new Deathrite Shaman, and it's green and red.
I saw a lot of pretty negative reaction to Legacy from Legacy players.
And I don't blame them.
No, it's not just that card, though. Did you see the other card they were upset about?
I did not.
It's in the sideboard of Pete Ingram's deck, Plague Engineer.
Oh, yeah.
Like there are just a lot of decks that can't interact with it effectively and get hosed by it.
Interesting.
Elves being one of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Goblins is another one, which it was mentioned. Well, but I mean, here's the thing: Goblins gotten a little. You know, was one of those decks that you thought like might come back a little bit. You know, people had some hope for it, and it didn't. Know.
Does this mean that Mono Red Mogcatcher just like?
But like the thing with like Engineered Plague was I know poor Mogcatcher.
Yeah.
But like Engineered Plague was a card that saw play, but it was even. You know, I mean, think of the card that we've seen like Knight of Souls Betrayal, things like that. Plague Engineer being one sided is a pretty big issue. You know, when my True Name Nemesis gets to live and yours doesn't.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You know, when my Delvers get to live and yours don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's also a big one.
So, yeah, there's people are a little upset. These cards are, you know, Ren and Six just said had to find the right home, and honestly, maybe it didn't have to find the right home. Maybe we just entirely misevaluated it. Apparently we did, because it's a $100 Magic card.
Yeah, so, it's very expensive.
So here, let's see what the Star City price is. 90 out of stock.
Sold mine too early.
So you can get sleeves though that have that on it. 100 count sleeves for $10.
Oh,
so
nice.
Maybe that'll cure what ails you, but
probably not.
Oh, okay. So I do want to talk about the Azorius control deck for a second here, just because Shaheen Serrani is a master. the twos on all the planeswalkers.
It's
pretty good.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I think I might play this deck at Gen Con.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to borrow some some Jaces from a friend. But
yeah,
did you have any? Did you end up getting any?
I have two for me.
Oh, you're right.
I might be playing this at or something like this.
Okay, we'll play it against each other, and whoever wins the match.
Oh, okay. You know other people with Jaces. Come on,
I know.
Yeah, you know Dave has Jaces.
Yeah, Dave has Jaces,
and we know he's not going to Gen Con.
Ding. So, but yeah, this deck I think it looks sweet. It's probably bad, but it looks sweet.
I think like so.
I certainly can't pick it up and play like Shaheen Serrani again. So
oh yeah, definitely not. I think like the nice thing is like blue light control may not be as good as it once was now,
but it's as good once as it ever was.
But something that to take note of is that I didn't put these results on here, but we had a Legacy Challenge over the weekend that Canister went 12-0 with Kogak with Bridgevine. Not Bridgevine, but like Hogak Vine. So
that was Legacy?
No, that was Modern.
Yeah, because Austin Collins in 10th place played that deck.
Yeah.
Here,
so being able to still play a plethora of very good graveyard interaction is still important in the format.
Even though it's not showing up a ton here, like I've been testing. I've been playing Magic Online a bunch, and Dredge is everywhere over there.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, no, I agree. Getting to play Rest in Peace is nice.
It's a huge upside. And then you get to tailor your deck a little bit. It's harder to do in Modern. You only have so many cards that you can play, even though you'd like to have a 25-card sideboard. So hopefully you can do your best to predict what kind of metagame you're preparing for and still have a pretty good shot of being able to effectively execute your game plan. And like Azorius is just sort of definitely like the deck that you are going to be tweaking every week that you're going to go and play with it. But I think that you get a lot of, you know, mileage out of being able to do that, where some decks don't have that availability. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I don't know, like for me personally, like I've slowly been trying to get more comfortable with like playing control decks, and like I definitely, you know, playing Arena and playing like Standard control, which is a different beast, of course. But back when you could actually play Absorb and stuff like that, and actually play counter spells, you know, I did enjoy that style of play, and you know, it's something learning how to do that gives you a little bit of more of a perspective on how those players think, which is helpful if you're going to play other kind of decks. So.
I haven't played one super recently, but control is one of my favorite archetypes, and played a lot of control decks. Played Gifstron forever. I've been playing that on Magic Online. Like I said, it's not good. I tried. It's just bad. It's bad. It hurts my soul. But yeah, I'm excited to try this. I picked up a lot of the cards for it. Got the Prismatic Vistas, which is good value.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jace's I just didn't want to spend the money on. So
yeah, I don't blame you.
I'll borrow them. Beyond that, there's a couple interesting ones. Pure Steel Paladin in fourth place. That's a cool deck. Very interactive. That deck also had I've never seen the name of this Legacy deck before.
Oh, Bomberman?
Bomberman. I don't know why I've just never seen that name before.
But. So it used to be Bomberman because of Karn, Silver Golem.
Oh, okay.
That's why, because he reminded people of Bomberman because he'd blow up their artifacts.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Blow up their, I think it is a vintage deck because you blow up Moxes.
That makes sense.
So this is a similar sort of idea, obviously, with Karn the Great Creator, who is a very good Bomberman as well.
That's true.
A lot of artifacts. But yeah, this deck is also playing Mystic Forge, you know, as a three of. So
that's pretty interesting.
For sure. I think one of the most commented things that I saw that I've been seeing is like Chalice of Void. Chalice of the Void is just, like, this is a Legacy deck, obviously, but, I mean, we even see it in Standard with Eldrazi Tron being fairly popular. It's like, Chalice of the Void is just at a good spot in the modern format currently. So, if you are deciding to play a deck, you definitely have to be prepared to combat Chalice in some way, shape, or form. Not just fold to it.
Yeah, that's fair. Anything else from the Open?
We talked about Bomberman, which I wanted to comment on. Nothing too wild that I can recollect.
Really, a Rakdos Judith deck in 23rd place. Brian Mears, Standard. 4 Dreadhorde Butcher, 3 Gutterbones, 4 Knight of the Ebon Legion, 4 Wily War Boss, 4, wow, that wasn't a word, Legion War Boss, 4 Priest of the Forgotten Gods, 3 Kindling Phoenix, 3 Rix Mahdi Reveler, 3 God Eternal Bantu, 3 Judith, 2 Chandra Acolyte of Flame, 4 Shock. So,
interesting.
Plague Mare is a card that saw a lot of sideboard play this weekend and was quite good. The Vampires deck were playing, Eric Hawkins talked about it, he was playing, his win in round for the GP. They interviewed him, and apparently he had a pretty slow start against Blood Flyers, and they had, like, 4 guys. And he's like, he's like, there's going to play Safari next turn, and I'm going to die. Unfortunately, none of those lists seem to do too well, but that deck does look sweet. And he just drew Plague Bear and 4 for 1 to. So,
that's a bad horse.
bad horse. He's bad. So,
But again, with these team events, it's always hard to, like, derive good data from them because you never know.
You're just looking at lists.
Basically.
So. Should we point out that the Izzet Phoenix did really well there. If we look at the classic, Mono Red Phoenix returns, which makes me pretty happy.
Yeah. The tournament was won by Nick Urban, defeating Mono Red Phoenix, piloted by Joe Ambrosio in the finals. So, this is definitely a very real deck, and it's big brother. Is it Phoenix hasn't really overshadowed it. It still exists and can still win tournaments.
The second place list, which did lose, I want to mention, is fairly interesting. The local player I went to the Invitational with, he's done some work on some pretty interesting decks. Mm-hmm. He was talking about he was playing the deck with Runaway Steamkin again because he felt like it was pretty well positioned again. And here we see 4 copies of Runaway Steamkin.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I like a lot of the stuff in this list. Going back to some number of Tormenting Voice is important because I kept feeling like there was not enough ways to discard my Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of why the Mono Red Prowess deck became a thing because Phoenix maybe wasn't as good. So I like sort of the intermediary, but man, Runaway Steamkin is that goes back to the first builds of these decks.
Yeah,
and if it's unchecked,
run away with the game. I get it. I understand.
Did it.
I do think that when you look at this top 8, you don't see a lot of common decks, to be honest. We have Grixis Urza in 3rd place, Counters Company in 4th, which is not something that people have really
Counters Company and Devoted combo, which is also a
Devoted Devastation.
Yeah, so in the top 16. So yeah, that's...
Then we have Eldrazi Tron, Jund, and then Burn again. So 2 Burn lists showing up in the top 8. And then the top 16, you have things like Orzhov Eldrazi, another Grixis Urza deck. You have Jim Davis piloting Goblins,
yeah,
which
that's
is
pretty sweet.
There you go. There's a place where you can play your Goblins if you want. But in the Classic, there is I think a fair amount of Grixis Urza. There's 3.
Yeah,
I think that might be.
We talked about that as being a deck that might definitely gain after Hogak.
And,
so,
to be fair, there were a lot of people in the Open in the Modern seat playing Grixis Urza. You definitely saw it a lot. It wasn't uncommon.
And there's a couple Mono Blue as well. There's 1 or 2 Mono Blue prisons that had
Urzas. Oh yeah, that's true too. That's true too. But this modern classic seems pretty divergent than even what you would see, which you would expect to see at a traditional modern tournament. You would expect to see like a blue white. You would expect to see maybe a humans list. There's no humans list in this top eight. It's surprising to see like the best vile Cavernous Souls deck is goblins. So yeah, just kind of surprising, you know, data points to pull from the classic and see like how other people are exploring the modern format since the bannings. So. Yeah, I think that's going to be everything that we have for this episode about Year End Step. Some things that we have coming up on the weekend, we obviously have, you know, something in our backyard, Star City Games Columbus, which is going to be modern. I don't think Mike or I are actually going to be able to go to it, but we'll be sure to provide coverage on it once we see what wins and how the tournament actually goes. And then we actually have a competing tournament going on over the weekend that's also going to be modern, which is the Pro Tour, the Mythic Championship. So we have Mythic Championship 4, I think, in Barcelona, which is also modern in Modern Horizons Draft. So that's going to be a really interesting tournament. Modern Horizons Draft is obviously a pretty fun format to watch. And then obviously Modern is going to be in a interesting place. We still have a lot of exploring to do post-banning, and we'll see how everything shakes out with that. But those are going to be the two things that are going to be happening coverage-wise over the weekend. So be sure to keep an eye on those. And we'll talk about them next week. So, if you do want to reach out to us, you most certainly can. We do have the Twitter. It's at Year End Step, and it's Your End Step. When you add us, then it's at Year End Step. We also have an email. It's at Year End Step at gmail.com. And then lastly, we have Facebook, facebook.com/@YourEndStep. We also, if you are listening to us via a podcast application that allows you to leave a rating or review, we would greatly appreciate you doing so. We feel that we're a five-star podcast, so we would appreciate any sort of feedback that you do have for us. Also, if you're listening to us via Legit MTG, thanks for picking up the show. Be sure to check out some of the other articles, including an article that Mike may or may not write about Brawl in the future. And if you are shopping, definitely check out their store that they have on there. While you're online, also check out worldofthecomictown.com. Again, they have a lovely comic book podcast they do weekly. It's called Black, White, and Red All Over. And be sure to check out their calendar so you can keep an eye on what magic events are coming down the pipeline there. Lastly, but certainly not least, we want to give a big thank you to all of our patrons over at patreon.com/@YourEndStep. We really couldn't do the show without you, and we appreciate all of the support. So, but again, that's going to be everything for us this week. We will catch you next time, and you have a great one. Bye.